Chapter 21. Clattermore tried to keep the scowl from his face, but things were not going as smoothly as he'd hoped they would.
"Where is this ship you mentioned?"
Clattermore asked. Majasilax gave him a patient look.
"Stop being sour. You couldn't have known that when Varek tried to access the heavy cruiser's systems, it would trigger lockdown protocols."
Clattermore glanced around. They were a large group with 100 volunteers who had come to his aid, and now they had no ship to use.
"Our list of crimes is growing, and we have very little to show for it. Also, at this rate, we'll be overdue to meet the Athena at the rendezvous point. We should never have divided our efforts," he said.
"The ship is through here,"
Majasilax said, leading them down a long corridor at the edge of the shipyards. Clattermore brought up the schematics of the shipyards, and according to them, there was nothing on this end of the yard. The wide metallic corridors were a dingy gray, as if no boxen had been down here for some time.
"Who would keep a ship here?"
Clattermore asked. He glanced behind them at the floating capsule that contained High Counselor Awan's unconscious body. Two boxen soldiers were pushing it. Only a select few knew they'd taken the High Counselor against his will. The two soldiers thought they were guiding some delicate sensor equipment they needed to bring to Sethion. The High Counselor's bodyguard stood nearby and kept a close watch on the capsule.
"It's a classified project, but we were building our own ship here,"
Majasilax said. Clattermore frowned in confusion.
"The Mordoxian sect?" he asked.
"It's an experimental cruiser-class ship. It should have the capacity we need with room to spare to hold the Athena in its docking bay,"
Majasilax said. Clattermore suppressed a sigh, wondering how many secrets Majasilax had clattering around in her brain. Majasilax led them to a large set of doors at the end of the corridor. Clattermore tried to use his neural implants to initiate a connection, but there wasn't any. Majasilax opened a panel and quickly entered a few commands. There was a loud clang as the doors unlocked and then opened in the center. Clattermore quickened his step and caught his first glimpse of a Boxan battlecruiser that looked to have seen better days.
"How long has it been sitting here?"
Clattermore asked.
"We devoted resources to it when we could. The ship is spaceworthy, I assure you,"
Majasilax promised. Clattermore and the others went closer, and there was a general muttering from the soldiers. He looked at Majasilax.
"I need more reassurance that we're not going to die because the ship falls apart while trying to get out of here,"
he said.
"Fine. This was the ship I used to get me to Confederation space where Mar'ar Den took me prisoner," Majasilax said.
Clattermore glanced at the ship and back at the Mardoxian priestess.
"How'd it get back here?"
he asked. Majasilax waved away the question.
"Doesn't matter. It's spaceworthy, and that's all you need to worry about."
Clattermore watched as Majasilax sent a remote command to have the ship's systems brought online. The cruiser was surrounded by crates and containers, some of which were marked as ammunition. He glanced around, looking for Varek, and waved him over.
"I want you to take a team and make a sweep of these containers. Anything you think we need, I want brought aboard the ship immediately. Priority is given to ammunition and medical supplies. We don't know exactly what we're going to find when we get to Sethion,"
Clattermore said. Varek glanced at the chaos of containers and crates strewn throughout the landing bay.
"And we get to take a ship whose capabilities we're not convinced are up to the task," he said.
"Sarcasm from you, Varek?"
Clattermore asked, slightly amused.
"Work enough with humans and some of their mannerisms are bound to rub off on you, Battle Commander."
Clattermore nodded.
"Agreed," he said.
Varek left him and set about the task Clattermore had given him. Majasilax waited for him at the top of the cruiser's entrance ramp, which he bounded up with the aid of his power armor. All other ships he'd commanded had battle steel armored hulls, gleaming with a polished bronze that would both absorb and reflect a star's shine in an impressive display. Those sights accorded any boxen the honor and pride of serving in the military. But the full gray hull of this cruiser lacked any such appeal. It might be spaceworthy, but was it battle-worthy? Their options were limited at this point, and time was already against him. Majasilax waited at the door and opened it. He followed her through and was surprised at the pristine conditions inside the ship, which was in stark contrast to the outside. Cyan lines began to glow, lighting up the interior. The walls of the corridors were white, and his internal heads-up display identified the material as ceramite. He took a step back outside the ship.
No need for that. Your sensor is correct. The entire ship is coated with a ceramite composite that makes the armor plating of this ship stronger than anything in the fleet,
Majaslak said. Cladomore followed her into the ship.
You're just full of surprises. How did your sect manage to pull this off? What else can this ship do? This is no ordinary cruiser.
It has a state-of-the-art weapons system and cyber warfare suite. The cruiser has limited stealth capabilities and enough armament to make any Zaijin warship commander wish he hadn't crossed our path. I trust you will find it satisfactory,
Majaslak said. Cladomore's implants buzzed to life as Majaslak authorized him with bridge officer access to the ship's systems. One thing he could say about the Mardoxian sect, they knew how to build a ship. He sent out a signal to the rest of their crew with orders to board the ship immediately. Earlier, Varek had broken the crew down into groups and already had assignments for all of them based on their level of expertise. Cladomore headed for the bridge and opened the doors. Most of the systems were still coming online, but the bridge systems were already on. Sensing their commanding officer's presence, Cladomore's implants greedily took in all the status updates of the ship's primary system. Varek was making short work of loading the supplies, and more of the bridge crew began to show up. Triflin saluted him and went over to the navigation work area. Varek opened a comms channel to Cladomore.
All supplies and crew on board, Battle Commander.
Acknowledged. Report to the bridge, Cladomore said.
He went over to the command couch and sat down. The cushions molded themselves to him, and the commander's holoscreen came up in front of him. Majaslax sat next to him.
You seem pleased now, she said.
This is more than I could have hoped for. Why didn't you tell us about this sooner? It would have saved precious time, Cladomore said.
I really thought the heavy cruiser would work, but I checked the manifest after the lockdown was initiated and saw that while construction was nearing completion, it wasn't fully loaded with munitions and supplies, Majaslak said.
The door to the bridge opened, and a pair of Boxen soldiers guided the floating capsule inside. Cladomore told them to secure it next to the command station.
Engines are coming online, Battle Commander,
Triflin said. Cladomore familiarized himself with the ship while the crew went about their final checks of the critical systems. In any other circumstance, they would have taken a few days at the very least before taking a ship such as this from the space dock, but they had no choice. By now, the Athena would be waiting for them, and the Boxens on Sethion needed them. Their return to Sethion was long overdue, and Cladomore felt as if something were filling his chest. He recalled having this feeling before when he'd initially set off for Nerva. The High Council had provisionally given him support for that mission, and in doing so, had set him on the path he was on today. He glanced over at Majaslax, wondering just how much the Mardoxian priestess had influenced these events. Had all these things that had come to pass been by her design? Even Hodak seemed to defer to Majaslax on certain things, meeting the humans, helping the Nershals take back their planet, and now going to Sethion to rescue what was left of their race. Cladomore's chest swelled with anticipation. He wished they were but one ship in a large task force designated for this mission, but at least they had one ship. It would have to be enough.
Ready to leave the shipyards at your command, Triflin said.
Very well, Cladomore said. Take us out.
The hangar doors opened above them, and the Boxan cruiser lifted away from the docking clamps. So far, no flight officers had noticed them.
Engage stealth systems, Cladomore said.
Confirmed, Battle Commander. Just to make you aware, the stealth systems are limited in comparison to our standard stealth scout ship. This ship carries a much heavier armament that, when brought fully online, will significantly diminish our stealth capabilities, Varek said.
Understood,
Cladomore replied, and made a mental note to review the combat capabilities of the ship. The cruiser sped away, putting some distance between itself and the shipyard. Cladomore kept waiting for klaxon alarms to go off, indicating they'd been discovered, but all was quiet. The stealth systems were working, and for the moment, they appeared to have escaped.
"You look surprised," Majasalak said.
Clattermore used his neural implants to familiarize himself with the cruiser's systems.
"This is an experimental ship, which in my mind means it's unproven. Have the designs for this ship been shared? Are there others being built?"
"A version of the design has been approved. Of course, the part where we've been stockpiling ceramite has been kept confidential within the Mardoxian sect. We've expanded the sect to include our own engineering group, which helped speed up the development of certain systems," Majasalak said.
"This is the first I'm hearing of this. What's next? You'll have your own soldiers or some other security force?"
Clattermore asked.
"Everything we've done, with the exception of the ceramite stockpile, has been with the High Council's full awareness," Majasalak said.
Clattermore regarded the Mardoxian priestess for a moment. The Mardoxian sect was a force to be reckoned with, and the fact that they were working to manipulate events wasn't surprising. The sheer fact that this ship existed at all was indicative of the potential for the Boxans to splinter into opposing factions. Although this potential existed in any culture, the likelihood of disintegration had escalated for the Boxans since the fall of Sethion. Had the Mardoxian sect anticipated such a break and begun taking steps to control the outcome? Or were they merely trying to make the Boxans stronger so they could endure?
"Battle Commander, we're far enough away from Alaron to open a wormhole. Cherubian Drive is ready," Triflin said. "Set a course for the rendezvous point, or the humans might just leave us behind," Clattermore said.
The Cherubian Drive spun up, and a wormhole opened in front of the ship. The stealth field dropped, and the cruiser lurched forward. A short while later, they emerged from the wormhole at the away point.
"Contact the Athena and give them an update," Clattermore said.
He didn't want the Athena's crew to feel threatened because they'd arrived in a different ship than what was expected. The Athena appeared on the main holo display, and the cruiser was fast closing the distance between them. Clattermore didn't want to give any thought to the potential outcome if they were to fail on this mission. If they did fail and somehow the Athena was destroyed, they'd lose their only link to the Drar, along with the knowledge they'd given the humans. The away point was a place between star systems in the Great Expanse, and there was little chance of anyone finding them. From there, they could go to Sethion with little risk of anyone like the Zai-Jins being able to retrace their wormholes back to Alaron. The cruiser hovered over the small human ship, and the main hangar swallowed the Athena up.
"The Athena is docked in the main hangar, Battle Commander," Varric said.
"Shall I set a course for Sethion?"
Triflin asked.
"Bring us well outside the quarantine zone, and I want a full sensor sweep of the area when we arrive,"
Clattermore said. Triflin engaged the Cherubian Drive, and the cruiser moved forward into the wormhole as a moment of heavy silence settled over the bridge. Most of them hadn't been anywhere near the Boxan home star system since they'd left during the Chaos Wars. When they emerged from the wormhole, the image on the main holoscreen showed a distant main-sequence star. The door to the bridge opened, and all nine of the Athena's crew walked in. Garak was the last through the door. Clattermore had seen the scientist show a range of emotions during their time together, and he believed the level of anger exuding from his friend was at a new level. Garak looked over at the capsule that held the High Counselor.
"Not the ship we were expecting," Kaelin said.
"We had a change of plans," Clattermore said.
Garak moved over to the capsule and checked the High Counselor's vital signs.
"You can open it now," Clattermore said.
Jaxu, the High Counselor's bodyguard, stood nearby. Without a word, Garak opened the capsule. There was a snap hiss, and the capsule clamps sprang open. Garak lifted the lid on the unconscious form of High Counselor Awan.
"What's this? Is that who I think it is?"
Hicks asked after peering into the capsule.
"It is," Kaelin said. "Zek did say the best way through the quarantine zone was with actual authorization."
Hicks' mouth hung open, and he glanced at Clattermore.
"Does your crew know they've just taken part in taking the High Counselor hostage?"
"He's not a hostage," Clattermore said. "He's free to get off the cruiser after we reach our destination."
Hicks blew out a breath and looked at Kaelin.
"Why didn't you say anything to us about this?"
"I made a decision. We were already committed to going to Sethion. We're here, and Awan is going to get us inside,
Kaelin said.
What happens if he refuses?
Hicks asked.
He won't,
Kaelin said. Hicks looked at Clattermore.
What are you going to do if he doesn't cooperate?
He asked.
Let's find out,
Clattermore said, and looked at Garrok.
Revive him.
Garrok entered a few commands, and the breather mask on High Counselor Awan's face detached itself. The High Counselor started to awaken, and Garrok helped him sit up. After a few moments, the High Counselor climbed to his feet and thanked Garrok for his help. But when his eyes found Clattermore, they narrowed angrily.
You,
said the High Counselor through clenched teeth. He swung his gaze around, taking note of all those who surrounded him. Then he glanced at the main holoscreen behind Clattermore.
How dare you bring us back here?
Clattermore stepped closer to the High Counselor, scowling.
How dare you expect us to leave Boxons behind? The High Council exists to protect all Boxons, not just the ones on Alaron. We're here, and so are you,
Clattermore said. High Counselor Awan saw Jaxu.
You let him do this? I want him arrested,
he said, and then pointed at Majasalax.
I want her arrested, too.
This was my idea, Kaelin said. I was the one who stunned you. They're all here because of me.
High Counselor Awan seemed shocked to hear this.
But you understood our reasons for leaving Sethion. Was that a lie?
He asked.
Kaelin shook her head. No, I do understand your reasons for leaving Sethion. What I don't agree with are your reasons for staying away. There are Boxons who need our help. Who need your help.
We don't know who's under the Zygen influence,
High Counselor Awan said.
I don't care, Kaelin snapped. They don't have to return to Alaron. We can find somewhere else for them to go other than your precious colony. They have a right to live without being condemned to finish their days on a dying planet. Those are the actions of a primitive species, and very un-Boxon-like at that.
All activity on the bridge ceased in a heavy moment of silence. Clattermore stepped back from the High Counselor and smoothed his features.
She's right, Awan,
Clattermore said.
All of us have become too comfortable with making decisions such as these and then rationalizing them for cycles to come. Don't you feel it? Those moments in the resonance chambers? Do you hear them? The cries of all the Boxons we left behind? We used to be a race of beings that exemplified what the Confederation should be. Now we're just scraping away an existence, locked in a war with the Zygins. But this is something we can do. Going to Sethion is something we should do.
The High Counselor's shoulders slumped, and he blew out a long breath.
I hear them all my waking hours. My only solace is knowing the colony is safe, that the Boxons we were able to save are safe.
You can change things right here now. Give us the authorization we need to get through the quarantine zone so we can get to Sethion,
Kaelin said. High Counselor Awan took a few steps away from them, gazing at the holoscreen that showed the Boxan home star system. With only a moment's further hesitation, he raised his wrist and a holo interface appeared above it. The High Counselor spoke softly and the holo interface changed colors from amber to green, then disappeared. High Counselor Awan turned towards them.
Authorization has been given. You can transfer when we get closer.
Clattermore brought his fist across his chest.
High Counselor,
he said. The formal salute was repeated by the Boxons throughout the bridge, and Clattermore returned to the command couch.
Battle stations! Set condition red throughout the ship,
Clattermore said. His orders were repeated. Weapons systems came online, and the data from the active scans began to show on the main holoscreen. High Counselor Awan walked over to the command area.
I'm afraid I don't understand. You have my authorization. Why have you gone to battle stations?
Clattermore gestured to the couch next to his, and the High Counselor sat down.
Even considering our unorthodox approach to this mission, it's still very much a military operation, and I cannot take my ship or the crew into a potentially hostile situation without being ready for attack,
Clattermore said. We appreciate it. Believe me, Zack said.
Battle Commander, Varric said. Scans are showing massive ship signatures inside the quarantine zone.
Clattimore frowned and peered at the holoscreen. Near Cetheon, a fleet of starships was gathered at the Lagrange point between the planet and the star. The quarantine zone was among the outer system of planets, mostly gas giants with moons that the Boxons had long since mined to depletion. He shifted the viewer to show the area just beyond the quarantine zone. There were vast defensive platforms and a massive field of debris from the ships the defensive platforms had destroyed. The cruiser's AI rapidly analyzed the field and began noting distinct ship signatures. Most of them were Boxon, but there were more than a few Zai-Jin warships. It was a cold comfort to know that the quarantine zone had also kept the Zai-Jins out, but the even greater expanse of derelict ships inside the zone was an ominous sign of all the Boxons who had tried to escape from Cetheon and died in the process.
"Take us in," Clattimore said.
The Boxan cruiser went in on a direct approach, and as they reached the quarantine zone, the automated defensive platforms serving as a blockade came online. Multiple alarms registered as the targeting systems of those defensive platforms locked onto them. As the commanding officer, Clattimore had to transmit High Councilor Awan's authorization as a member of the Boxan Council. Everyone on the bridge waited in silent anticipation to see if the authorization would go through, and after a few moments, the target locks began to disappear as clearance to enter the system was given.
"Take us in slowly. There is still a lot of debris out there," Clattimore said. "How do you plan to determine who's under Zai-Jin influence and who isn't?"
High Councilor Awan asked. Majasalax came to her feet.
"The records show that the Zai-Jins used their compulsion abilities on elite military forces, as well as high-ranking officials. It was one of the reasons their rebellion was so effective. I've run some initial analyses of the planet to determine the locations of any surviving Boxons."
"Then what?"
"We'll look for certain factors. Since the elite military was already known to be under Zai-Jin influence, it could be a safe assumption that the most heavily armed group of Boxons are still under Zai-Jin control. Our last communications with Cetheon showed pockets of civilians and scientists staying together, trying to find places to hide. Kalin's experience in the Mardoxian chamber does indicate that there are still warring factions, which is what I would expect given the circumstances,"
Majasalak said. The High Councilor looked at Kalin.
"Will you be able to point us in the right direction?"
he asked.
"I know where I saw the Boxons fighting each other 2 days ago. It was among the ruins of a city. I didn't see all of it, but I could definitely get us to the area," Kalin said.
"It's likely they won't be there anymore," Zack said, drawing the attention of the others. Clattimore glanced over at Zack. The clever human was keenly observant and seemed to have no end of insights into situations such as these.
"This is just a guess," Zack began. "We should look for evidence where Kalin last saw them, but I doubt that's where the Boxons we want to help are living."
"You're probably right. I'm just wondering how you arrived at your opinion," Clattimore said.
"Your own records show the devastation from the wars that were fought. The effects were felt across the globe. With the collapse of any civilization, you'd have groups banding together to increase their odds of survival. Given the advanced technology available to the Boxons even on a dying world, their reach for exploits to scavenge for supplies would be much more widespread than if something like this happened on Earth," Zack said.
"You refer to their operational abilities to conduct scavenger missions around the planet,"
Clattimore said.
Zack nodded. "Exactly."
"Which means the Boxons we want to find could be anywhere," Kalin said.
Clattimore glanced at Majasalax.
"He's probably right. We need to figure out where the Boxons we want to rescue are hiding. If we send out a broadcast, we may attract the attention of the Boxons under the Zai-Jin influence."
"Contact!" Triflin shouted. "Multiple contacts detected. Heading for us!"
"Who are they?"
Clattimore asked.
"Unknown. They're not responding to any of our attempts at communication,"
Triflin said.
"Their energy signature indicates they're smaller spacecraft. I'd say drone class," Varric said.
"On screen,"
Clattimore said. The main holoscreen changed to show several squadrons of drones heading directly for them. Clattimore's brows pushed forward.
"Automated defensive turrets online! I want those things targeted!" "Missile launch detected,"
Triflin said. Multiple missile launches were shown from the squadrons of drones heading towards them.
"Countermeasures,"
Clattimore said.
"I want strike fighter squadrons black and gold launched immediately. Cleared to engage." "I don't understand,"
High Counselor Awan said.
"The drone blockade should be down. We should be able to pass through the quarantine zone without any problems." "We are past the zone,"
Clattimore said.
"I should have anticipated this. These drones are from Cepheon, and I'm willing to bet they're programmed to fight the drone blockade that's part of the quarantine zone. Right now they think we're enemies." "Look at how many of them there are. We have to get out of here,"
High Counselor Awan said. Clattimore looked at the screen and sifted through the data feeds with his neural implants.
"We're not leaving. Evasive maneuvers. We're taking them out."
Chapter 22 Kyle sat down on the floor of the Zygin's makeshift flotilla. They'd been taken to a converted cargo room and left there. Crano and Adyas were each still bound at the wrists, but Kyle and the others were free to walk around. There were Zygins on the other side of the door, which was the only way out. They'd taken Evoth away earlier, and Kyle expected they would come for him next. Instead, the Zygins took Celia first, dragging her out into the corridor. Kyle and Dawson had tried to stop them, and Kyle had earned the harsh end of a shock lance to his ribs. It still hurt whenever he moved. The sound of spinning gears retracting snapped Kyle's attention to the cargo hold door as it opened. Corporal Celia Pearson was brought in by a company of Zygin soldiers. She looked dazed, as if she wasn't sure where she was. Kyle rose to his feet and took a step toward her, but the Zygin soldiers pointed their weapons at him.
"What did you do to her?"
Kyle asked. The soldiers didn't answer him. Pearson stumbled over toward them, and Kyle and Dawson caught her.
"Where's Evoth?"
Kyle asked. The nearest Zygin soldier's tail coiled and then flicked to the side. The tail was as long as the Zygin was tall and was as thick as his arm. Kyle tried to put on a brave face, but the Zygins with those tails creeped him out.
"Stand against the wall,"
the Zygin soldier said. Kyle and the others did as they were told. He glanced over at Tom, and the young tech specialist looked to be barely keeping his wits together. Another Zygin stepped through the doorway, blocking the bright lights beyond and distorting their facial features but for the radiance of long, platinum hair.
"Humans," a soft, sultry voice said, as a female Zygin stepped inside the cargo hold and sauntered over to them, her sleek black uniform clinging to her feminine form. She paused in front of Tom and ran her smooth fingertips along his face. Kyle watched as Tom tried to pull away, his eyes wide with terror.
"Leave him alone,"
Kyle said. The Zygin glanced over at him. Her mouth was slightly open, and Kyle saw sharply pointed teeth inside. The irises of her large eyes were ringed in purple.
"You may call me Chandra Renee," she said.
Kyle stuck his chin out and squared his shoulders.
"I can think of a few things to call you."
Chandra Renee pursed her lips and slowly shook her head.
"You're not the first human I've met. I think we can be friends, though," she said.
Kyle felt a slight buzz begin to build in the back of his mind. As the Zygin spoke, he found his gaze focused on the fullness of her lips, so Kyle narrowed his gaze and looked away from her, clenching his teeth. And the buzzing stopped. Kyle heard a soft moan escape Tom's lips, and then he shook his head in a painful grunt. Kyle glanced over at Pearson and Dawson. Pearson's eyes didn't seem to be focused on anything in particular, and Dawson's rigid expression looked as if he were bracing himself for something to happen. Kyle stepped away from the wall, and the Zygin soldiers stepped toward him with their weapons raised. The pulsating hum from the weapons gave him pause.
"Whatever you're doing, it's not going to work," Kyle said.
Chandra Renee smiled.
"It already has worked," she said.
Kyle felt a coldness take hold of his chest. Part of him wanted to strike out at the female Zygin, but he knew it would be foolish of him to do so. He needed to find a way to get them out of here. There was a loud groan, drawing their attention to the open door. A large shadow filled the doorway, and Evoth stepped inside. His hands were at his sides. Crano and Adyas looked at Evoth with fear in their eyes. The Zaijin called Mar-Arden followed him inside with long, purposeful strides.
"Evoth, teach this human some manners," Mar-Arden said.
Evoth bounded toward Kyle and shoved him against the wall. Kyle's head hit the wall and his vision swam. The boxen then grabbed him by the shoulders and flung him across the cargo hold like a rag doll. Pain blossomed from his shoulder where he caught the brunt of the blow. Hearing heavy steps pounding towards him, Kyle scrambled out of the way. He regained his feet and shoved one of the containers into Evoth's path. The boxen easily stepped over it and grabbed Kyle by the throat. Kyle struggled to draw breath, but couldn't. He coughed and tried to kick out with his legs, but the powerful boxen held him at arm's length.
"Please!"
Kyle choked out, but then went cold at the vacant expression in Evoth's eyes. It was like he wasn't there anymore.
"That's enough!"
Dawson cried. Kyle tried to pull the boxen's powerful hands from his neck, but Evoth was much too strong. His field of vision narrowed as if he were seeing down a long, dark tunnel.
"Let him go,"
Mar-Arden said. Evoth dropped Kyle to the ground and returned to Mar-Arden's side. Kyle gasped for breath and fought to catch his breath. Evoth easily could have killed him. He glanced at the boxen, looking for some sign of the Evoth he knew, but his mind was gone. Kyle glanced over at Crano and Adyas, and they were looking at the Zaijins with pure hatred in their eyes. Kyle could see they wanted to fight. Mar-Arden looked amused by the boxen's display.
"You know it's helpless," he said.
Crano growled, coming to his feet. He took several steps toward the Zaijins and stopped. Chandra Renee let out a soft laugh.
"That's no way to treat your superiors." "Kneel,"
Chandra Renee said. Crano stood perfectly still for a moment. His face contorted in pain, and Chandra Renee stepped closer to him until her face was just inches from the boxen. Her harsh gaze focused on him.
"I said kneel."
Crano let out a harsh gasp of breath that sounded like a strangled cry. Kyle clenched his teeth and charged, tackling Chandra Renee to the ground. He felt something hard slip around his neck, pulling him roughly off of her, and Kyle was slammed to the ground. Chandra Renee darted over to him. She grabbed him by his hair, and Kyle felt her claws dig into his scalp.
"Look!"
Chandra Renee hissed. Kyle opened his eyes and saw Crano kneeling on the ground. The boxen stared at him, the pupils of his flaxen eyes dilated.
"I'm sorry,"
Crano said in a harsh whisper. Kyle felt his eyes tear up in frustration, blurring his vision. He tried to jerk away from Chandra Renee's grasp, but the Zaijin was so strong that she held him in place, forcing him to watch the boxen lose his mind. Kyle stopped struggling and watched Crano. The boxen's eyes bulged, and he cocked his head to the side. He glared at Kyle through sheer force of will alone.
"Fight them, human! Fight them!"
Crano sank to the ground with a great sigh. Kyle and the others watched as Crano's chest continued to rise and fall. He was still breathing. Chandra Renee let him go, but Kyle couldn't stop looking at Crano.
"On your feet,"
Chandra Renee said. Crano pushed himself to his feet.
"Very good. Now go stand by the wall," Chandra Renee said.
Kyle watched as Crano did as he was told. He'd known about the Zaijin's compulsion ability and how the boxens were vulnerable to it, but that was nothing to actually seeing it firsthand. He glanced over at Adyas, who sat dejectedly, resigned to her fate. There was a smoldering fury in her gaze, but she knew fighting it would be hopeless. Kyle watched as the Zaijins made a living corpse of Adyas as well, and he turned away from it.
"One of four," Chandra Renee said.
Kyle glanced up at her, but she was speaking to Mar-Arden.
"Interesting," Mar-Arden said, and looked at Kyle. "You're still unconvinced, I see. You think you can fight us? Better species than yours have tried, and all have failed.
Kyle glared up at the Zaijin and slowly regained his feet. He glanced at his crew, who stood by the wall.
We'll see, Kyle said.
Defiant until the end,
Mara Den said, and looked at the Zaijin soldiers.
Leave us, he said.
The Zaijin soldiers left the room, and only Mar Arden and Condra Renee remained.
There are four of you. Will you take your chance now? This will be your only chance,
Mar Arden said. Kyle went to stand by his crew and folded his arms across his chest. There would be a time to fight, and this wasn't it.
See, Condra Renee? They can be quite agreeable,
Mar Arden said. The Zaijins left them, and Kyle watched as the three Boxens followed them out. He didn't know what was more unsettling, the fact that the Zaijins no longer considered the Boxens a threat, or the fact that the Boxens actually were no longer a threat. Once they were alone, Kyle sank to the floor, the pain from his side almost unbearable.
We have to get out of here, Dawson said. You'll get no arguments from me, Kyle said. Sir, I need you to lift up your shirt. We should make sure you're not bleeding internally,
Dawson said and looked at Celia.
Pearson, give me a hand.
Corporal Pearson's eyes blinked and she glanced down at them, then immediately came to help. They lifted Kyle's shirt and he gasped in pain.
No skin discoloration. We'll need to keep an eye on it, Dawson said.
Tom Blake was muttering to himself, shaking his head. Kyle sat up and rested against the wall.
Tom, look at me, he said.
Tom stopped muttering and looked at him.
I know you're scared. We all are. But we need to stay focused.
Tom nodded his head and took several deep breaths.
There has to be a way out of here. This is some kind of cargo hold, not a cell. Wouldn't there be another way out?
Kyle said, and started to rise to his feet. Dawson held him down.
Hold on a second. Are your implants still working?
Kyle frowned and saw that they were offline. He engaged the startup sequence.
They must have gone offline when they knocked us out.
As his neural implants came online, they registered his injuries and the smart nanofiber of his suit tightened around his middle. Kyle felt the pain ease from his ribs as medicine entered his system, and he sighed with relief.
Good call, Lieutenant, Kyle said. I was waiting for them to leave before trying it myself, Dawson said.
I can't believe what they did. Evoth tried to kill you, Tom said.
No, he didn't, Kyle said. Evoth is dead, and so are Crano and Adyas. Whatever they were before is gone.
There was a grim moment of silence as they all acknowledged it. Tom's face became pale.
I didn't realize it would be so painful, he said, and swallowed hard.
We need to figure a way to get out of here and warn Earth, Kyle said.
Tom's eyes widened and he glanced toward the ceiling.
You don't think they're watching us?
Kyle shrugged. I'm sure there's a guard at the door or nearby, but you saw them. They don't think we're a threat at all. Why would we be? There are only four of us against all of them.
What can we do?
You heard Crano's last words. We fight. If we stay here, we're dead. Or worse. Our top priority is to send word back to ECF Command, Kyle said. What do you want us to do? Dawson asked. I want you and Pearson to see if there's an access panel or something. Anything we can fit into to get out of here. Don't be obvious about it, just in case they are watching us. Blake, turn your implants back on. I want you to try and get access to the Zaijin computer systems here. If that doesn't work, try and link up to our shuttle systems, Kyle said.
Dawson started making his sweep around the edges of the cargo hold, but Pearson just stood there with a confused frown on her face. Kyle was about to say something to her, when she muttered a hasty apology and started doing as he'd asked. Tom walked over to him.
Sir, we were locked out of the shuttle systems. What makes you think the lockout isn't still working?
Is it? Kyle asked.
The young comms specialist frowned in thought, and then his eyes lit up.
The shuttle systems are still online. How did you know?
They lured us out there because they needed a way to get close to Earth. The only way I can think for them to do that is with the shuttle's transponder codes, Kyle said.
The lockout was just to give them temporary access. Once they got here, they already had the access they needed, and since we're their prisoners, they didn't reinstate the lockout. Do they even know about our implants?
Tom asked. I don't know, Kyle said, and frowned as a thought suddenly came to his mind.
I can't access the Zygin's systems directly, but I think I can figure out where we are through the shuttle's navigation system, Tom said.
Dawson waved him over. Good. Stay on it, Kyle said to Tom. He stood up and circled around the cargo hold until he came to a stop near Dawson.
There's an access panel on the floor on the other side of the hold. No idea where it leads, but it's gotta be better than staying here, Dawson said.
Let's tell the others, Kyle said, signaling the others over to them. We think there's a way out of here, he said, and told them about the access panel.
But we have no idea where it leads, Tom said.
You can stay here and wait for the Zygins if you want,
Dawson said. Calm down, Kyle said. We stick together. They walked over to the corner of the cargo hold and pushed aside the empty metallic crates stacked there. Kyle knelt down and grabbed the handle on the access panel, but it wouldn't budge. He braced himself by placing his other hand on the floor, giving the panel a good yank, and it opened with a screech of metal. They all glanced toward the door and waited. Dawson crept over to the door and leaned toward it, listening. After a few moments, he looked back at them and shook his head. Kyle peered into the dark tunnel beyond, swung his legs around, and dropped down inside, hanging on to the edge, but his feet touched the bottom, so he let go. There was dim lighting, which his implants enhanced so he could see better. He stepped to the side, and the others dropped down one by one. Kyle and Dawson boosted Pearson back up so she could pull the access panel closed. Kyle doubted that any Zygin checking on them would be fooled for very long, but his aim was to give them as much time as he could so they had a better chance of finding a way out. The tunnels were lined with piping and thick cables wound together so they had to walk in a single file. More than once he wished he had some kind of schematic.
Do any of you remember anything from when they brought us on board? Kyle asked.
I do, sir, Pearson said. They brought us into some hangar and the cargo hold wasn't far away. I think if we keep heading in this direction, we might be able to reach the hangar.
The tunnel split in two directions, and Pearson pointed them to the left. After a few minutes traversing the tunnel, they began to hear sounds from a large, open area. Kyle slowed down. Above them, the ceiling changed to a series of grates, and Kyle glanced up to see Zygin soldiers standing nearby. The breath caught in his throat, and he crouched low to the floor. The others did the same. Together, they crawled along, trying to be as quiet as possible. There were so many Zygins that Kyle couldn't keep an accurate count.
Sir,
Tom whispered. Kyle turned toward him.
I've accessed the shuttle's navigation system. It's linked with the Zygin system, Tom said.
Good. Can you tell where the hell we are? Kyle asked.
Tom nodded.
Sir, we're not far from Earth, he said.
Kyle felt his heart thump in his chest. Through the grates above them, they heard,
Shuttle 27, this is Armstrong Base. We're past the scheduled check-in window. Is everything all right?
Kyle's eyes widened. The broadcast from the lunar base sounded clear as a bell.
We've experienced some technical difficulties with our comms equipment, Evoth said. We've investigated the downed shroud monitors and found a technical glitch that was corrupting the navigation system. We've repaired them and are returning shortly.
That's a relief. Is Colonel Matthews there? I'd like to have a word with him, the comms officer said.
Apologies, but he's asleep at the moment. We'll alert you when we're closer. Shuttle out, Evoth said.
Kyle clenched his hands into fists and shifted his position. They had to find a way to warn them. He glanced at the others and saw the same concern in their eyes. How were they going to get past a room full of Zygins to alert the ECF? Kyle glanced at the others.
We need to get out of these tunnels and find a place to hide, he said.
Hide? We need to get out of here, Tom hissed.
The Colonel's right. We need to hide out for a while, Dawson said.
Pearson nodded.
Tom still looked confused. Kyle looked at Tom.
Suppose we could steal a shuttle, or even get our own shuttle back. They'd hunt us down, and we might not get word back to Earth. But if we wait and gather some intelligence, we'd stand a much better chance of sending back critical information. We know they're heading towards Earth, so they're already taking us where we want to go.
But Evoth, he's lying to the ECF. If we get caught, there'll be no one to warn Earth. Plus, any time now, they're going to discover we escaped, Tom said.
Kyle waved them in closer.
First, we need to get out of these tunnels. We're too exposed here. And Tom's right. It's only a matter of time before they realize we're gone. Second, we need to scout out our options for sending word to Earth. If the Zygens are monitoring what's happening on Earth, we can send a signal and sabotage their efforts. Third, we need to weigh off this ship, or whatever the Zygens have cobbled together. If we have to steal a ship and blast our way out of here, then fine. But if we do it closer to Earth, I'd much rather our strike fighters be closer to help than trying to escape from way out here.
What else would this be if it's not a ship? Tom asked.
Kyle shrugged.
I'm not sure. Why would they stick us in a cargo hold rather than the brig or an actual holding cell?
The others glanced at each other, but none of them knew for sure.
We're going to split up. Tom, you're with me. Dawson and Pearson, I want you to find a way to get off the ship. Tom and I are going to see if we can find a way to warn Earth. For now, we should be able to contact each other using our implants and the shuttle's internal comm systems,
Kyle said. He sent them a test message, and each of them nodded that they'd received it. Kyle watched as Dawson and Pearson headed off, using the tunnel network under the hangar to scout out their options for escape. Kyle nodded for Tom to follow him.
How are we going to warn Earth? Tom asked.
I was hoping you'd be able to help with that, Kyle said.
Tom's face reflected his surprise.
I suppose there are some things I could try, but I feel like all of them would warn the Zygens of what we're trying to do.
You're not wrong. I was thinking that we gain access to the Zygen system, Kyle said.
Wouldn't we need a Zygen for that? Tom asked.
The tunnel they were in narrowed, and they had to shuffle sideways to get through.
Most likely. I'll avoid it if I can, but more than likely we'll need a Zygen.
Kyle glanced back, and Tom looked like he was about to be sick.
This is what you signed up for. I know you probably thought that as a tech comm specialist you wouldn't be put into a situation to actually fight the Zygens, but here we are.
Tom sucked in a deep breath. I'll be fine, sir. You can count on me, he said.
Kyle nodded and kept on going.
Sir, there's something else I've been thinking about, Tom said.
Kyle stopped and waited to hear what the young specialist had to say.
When the Zygens did what they did to the Boxons, it seemed like that female Zygen was trying to do it to us, Tom said.
Kyle regarded the tech comm specialist for a moment.
You think one of us is compromised?
Tom glanced away from him.
I don't know. It's possible. They did take Pearson away for questioning.
Kyle sighed, not liking where his own thoughts were going on the matter. The kid was pretty smart, and Kyle was glad to have him along, even if he was a bit green for a mission like this. How could he tell if one of them was under the Zygen influence? He had felt Chandra Rene trying to do something to him, but he hadn't felt any different afterward. And if Tom was under the Zygen influence, why would he draw attention to it by bringing it up? Tom held his hands up in front of his chest.
I know, right? I don't feel any different. But would I know if I was under their influence? Would you? He asked.
Kyle clenched his teeth and shook his head.
God, how had the Boxons fought the Zygens for so long like this?
The only thing we can do is keep an eye on each other, and if the others do anything suspicious, you need to let me know, Kyle said.
Tom nodded. They kept on going, and Kyle couldn't help but realize this was yet another thing to add to their already substantial pile of worries. One thing at a time. That's what Michael Hunsicker always said. Solve one problem at a time. Focus on what you can influence, and acknowledge the rest. Then you might get to go home.
Chapter 23 Valkra spent hours poring over the old records of the Mardoxian sect and their role in Boxan society. Before the Chaos Wars, there were factions within the sect that provided advanced training for Boxans to develop their skills. Volcra knew the Zaijins wanted to duplicate the Mardoxian potential within their own species, so she understood why anyone with the Mardoxian potential must be protected from the Zaijins. But there was a point where isolation caused one of her race's most precious gifts to wither and die. There had been others with the Mardoxian potential who'd tried to guide the Boxans residing in the Havens, but they were all gone. Cardellier was right. She was the first Boxan in a long time to show signs of the potential, and she needed to keep it secret. If Counselor Essiphorn were to find out, Volcra would never be allowed to go on any scavenger missions. Her hand caressed Ronem's plasma pistol. She was supposed to return it, but hadn't. The hand cannon had recharged, along with her armor, and she felt more at home in her armor than out of it. Volcra walked down the corridor and headed to the command center. She saw Tholev pacing off to the side, and walked over to him.
"Is something going on?"
Volcra said. Tholev glanced at her in surprise.
"Yes, they sent out more scavenger teams and they've run into trouble."
"What happened?"
"The protectors have them pinned down and the transport ships can't get them out,"
Tholev said. Volcra's eyes darted to the battle commander, who was looking at a holo display of the city where the scavenger teams were pinned down.
"Fezzik is on duty,"
Tholev said. Fezzik was a battle commander who wasn't known for taking extreme risks. Volcra approached the table and studied the holo display. Protector teams were all over.
"There's no way to get them out,"
a pilot said over comms. Fezzik glanced at his second in command.
"We may need to pull them out," he said.
"If we do that, those squads will be lost," Sardon said.
This couldn't be happening. Volcra couldn't let them abandon those teams.
"You can't abandon them," she said.
Fezzik glanced over at her.
"What are you doing here? This isn't your concern. You're not cleared for duty."
"Battle Commander, we need to give them an answer," Sardon said.
Volcra watched as Fezzik tried to come to grips with the situation. The Boxan may bear the title of Battle Commander, but there hadn't been a real commander in the ranks since the Chaos Wars.
"Tell the pilots to pull out of there,"
Fezzik said. Volcra slammed her fist on the table.
"You coward! They need help! You can't just abandon them!"
"What would you have us do? Those squads are pinned down by the protectors. They're being held as bait to draw in our ships,"
Fezzik said. Volcra looked back at the layout of the city.
"They can get them out in teams. You need to send in more ships and provide covering fire, giving the squads a chance to escape."
Fezzik frowned as if the thought hadn't occurred to him. He shook his head.
"That won't work," he said.
"It will work. I can do it. Send me in,"
Volcra said. Fezzik regarded her for a moment.
"She's not cleared for duty," Sardon said.
Fezzik pressed his lips together and gave her a hard look.
"Bring them back,"
he said. Volcra stepped back from the table and ran towards the hangar, screaming for Tholev to follow her. The hangar was only a short distance from the command center. They emerged onto the hangar deck where several ships looked to be in a state of disrepair.
"Deck officer!"
Volcra shouted. A Boxan pulled himself out from behind one of the ships.
"I need a ship, now! One with weapons!"
Volcra said.
"This ship has weapons, but the engines are broken," the deck officer said.
Volcra scowled.
"I need something that flies right now, or all our scavenger squads on the surface are going to die," she said.
The deck officer pointed to the ship next to the one he was working on.
"This one flies, but has no weapons."
Volcra looked over at the ship. It was a transport carrier like the rest of them, except for its armor, which had half a dozen scorch marks, some of which could easily breach the hull. She glanced back at the ship with the weapons.
"How fast can you transfer that plasma cannon?"
Volcra asked. The deck officer looked back at it.
"Before you get through the pre-flight checks," he said, and started bellowing out orders to the hangar deck crew.
"Tholev, you're with me,"
Volcra said. They went to the ship and opened the cargo bay doors. As the door was in the middle of its opening cycle, it got stuck. Volcra reached to the top of the door, giving it a hard yank, and the door quickly opened.
"Are you sure about this?"
Tholev asked.
"You just need to worry about shooting the plasma cannon once they get it mounted and opening those doors when I say,"
Volcra said. She left Tholev to get set up and headed for the pilot's area where she climbed into the seat and started powering the ship's system. There was a loud clanging noise as the hangar deck crew attached the plasma cannon to the ship. The ship's system came online quickly and critical flight systems were ready. The weapons systems showed a single plasma cannon. Volker engaged the engines and the transport carrier lifted off the ground. She guided the ship toward the hangar bay doors. She opened a comms channel to command center.
"Request hangar doors to be opened," she said.
"One moment," the flight officer said.
Volker heard Boxen's arguing in the background, and she frowned.
"Flight officer, either you open those doors or I'll blast them open myself."
Volker closed the comms channel and sped toward the doors. No Boxen's left behind.
"Tholev, target the hangar bay doors and fire on my command," Volker said.
Volker heard the plasma cannon swing into position, and she was just about to order Tholev to fire when the doors quickly opened. Volker maximized the thrust, and the ship sped out of the hangar. Chapter 24 Kaelin stood on the bridge of the Boxan ship. Her gaze was focused on the main holoscreen that showed their ship and the strike fighter squadrons that were engaging the remnants of the drone blockade. When the battle first started, she'd frozen, and her mind had refused to work. She listened while Clatomore issued orders, and when Majasilax began providing input into his strategy, Kaelin was finally able to focus. All the training from the Boxens had been in preparation for this moment. At first, she began to anticipate Majasilax's input, guiding the strike fighter squadrons. She focused on the detailed map on the main holoscreen, her mind on both the bridge of the ship and among the strike fighters.
"Lure them toward the planet," Kaelin said.
Clatomore glanced at her, and then at Majasilax.
"I didn't see it. She's right. Draw them in."
Clatomore gave the orders. The drones that were part of the blockade were old and in a state of disrepair. Kaelin had no idea how long they'd been out there or how many ships they'd destroyed. The derelict ships around them were all carrier-class ships without heavy weapons, unlike what they had. Their weapons took out the drones in droves. The strike fighter squadrons baited the drones into following them toward the planet, their transponders registering with the orbital defense platforms near Cetheon as friendlies, unlike the drones. Only some of the defense platforms came online and unleashed their arsenal on the rogue drone blockade, but it was enough to cut down their numbers. Clatomore recalled the strike fighter squadrons and looked at Kaelin.
"Good call," he said.
"Thanks," Kaelin said.
"How'd you do that?" Zack asked.
Things were settling down on the bridge, and she looked away from the main holoscreen.
"When it first started, the battlefield was a swirling mass of confusion. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Then it was like I was in two places at once, but all over the area on the map," Kaelin said.
"Indeed. She was guiding our ships even faster than Majasilax at the end,"
Clatomore said. Kaelin looked at the Mardoxian priestess, who wore a proud smile.
"What if they disagreed on something?" Hicks asked.
"There's always a clear chain of command, even where the Mardoxian sect is concerned,"
Clatomore said. Hicks frowned.
"But Kaelin isn't a Boxen, and Majasilax has been her mentor," he said.
"That's true," Majasilax said, "and I will remain so. But in this moment, Kaelin's instincts were keener than my own. I'm very proud of this."
"Pride is different among Boxens. In some respects, we're like you humans, and in others, we're different. In this instance, it would depend on the Boxens involved. Our rules of engagement support the guidance of multiple Mardoxian priests. Depending on their abilities, they can be siloed in their strategic approach to a battlefield. Then there are those rare individuals who can take in the entire battlefield beyond even our greatest commanders,"
Clatomore said.
Kaelin felt a flush spread across her cheeks.
"I understand, and I'm trying to imagine using your tactics in our own fleet someday." "It's not going to be easy," Hicks said, and looked at Kaelin. "You know I trust you, but the military conducts operations back home very differently."
"Then they'll need to adapt," Zack said.
Hicks snorted.
"You make it sound so easy."
Zack nodded.
"I know. Easier said than done.
I get it."
Kaelin looked back at the main holoscreen, which showed a view of Cetheon. The surface was a dingy yellow with massive storm clouds. Beyond the planet were great hulking masses.
"What are those?" Kaelin asked.
Clattimore magnified the view, and the ship's AI immediately began classifying the vast debris field.
Those were massive transport carriers called Star Carriers. They were hit first in the Chaos Wars, Clattimore said.
Is there any chance we can find one that's relatively intact? Zack asked.
Clattimore looked over at Varek.
We've been actively scanning the system, and the data is still coming in. As soon as I have something, I'll let you know, Varek said.
Kalin kept looking at the view of the dying planet.
We need to divide our efforts.
What do you mean?
Clattimore asked.
After we find the Boxons, we need to get them off the planet. How many could we bring aboard here?
Kalin asked.
High Counselor Awan cleared his throat.
This isn't a transport carrier. We should resupply the Boxons we find, assuming we can tell which are not under the Zygin influence, and return to Alaron for more support.
Kalin shook her head.
We didn't come all this way to leave whoever we find and go back to Alaron. Look at all those ships. There has to be something that can still fly, she said.
We can't take them back to the colony. The rest of the council won't stand for it,
High Counselor Awan said. Kalin wanted to tell him she didn't care what the rest of the council could stand.
I have a suggestion, Zack said, drawing everyone's gaze toward him.
Well, more like a proposal, he said, while looking over at Atanu and Ezra. The Nurshals had been so quiet during the battle that she'd almost forgotten they were there.
What's your proposal? Atanu asked.
The Boxons here are refugees.
Could we bring them to Celebes for a time?
Zack said, and looked at Clattimore.
The Nurshals could help them get back on their feet.
Clattimore sighed and looked at Kalin.
It might be our only option, as much as I hate it, because once the Zygin become aware of Boxons living in the Nurshal star system, they'll bring the bulk of their fleet there since Earth is cut off, Kalin said.
Part of our fleet is already there, helping the Nurshal secure their star system, Clattimore said.
How will they react once they learn that Boxons from Cepheon are there? Kalin asked.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves,
Clattimore said, and looked pointedly at both Atanu and Ezra.
You are the only two representatives of the Nurshals on this ship. I understand that you cannot speak for Nerva.
We won't turn you away, Ezra said. It's the least we can do for exposing the Zygins to us. If we can get the refugees off the planet and to the Nerva star system, we'll provide aid and shelter. Even though we have colonies on Celebes, our numbers are small in comparison to the entirety of the Forest Moon. It's time we stick together. Our own global congress would be hard-pressed to deny your request.
Except he's not authorized to make the request,
High Counselor Awan said.
You are,
Clattimore said.
And if you won't, I will, by virtue of being there.
The High Counselor nodded. He had little actual power here, and he knew it.
Two teams, Clattimore said. Triflin, take us into orbit around Cepheon and start scanning the surface. We remain at combat ready.
He glanced at Kalin.
This will be a combat drop to the surface.
Kalin nodded.
Okay, so should we head to the hangar bay? Zack asked.
Kalin looked at Zack, knowing she couldn't keep the guilty look from her gaze. Zack's brows arched up.
No, he said.
We're going to split up,
Kalin said, and looked at the Athena crew.
I don't care what you say. I'm not leaving you, Zack said.
Zack,
Kalin said.
No! This is such bullshit,
Zack said, and stormed a few steps away.
So is your attitude.
Now listen up,
Kalin said, adding steel to her tone.
You, along with Efren, Nikolai, Vitomir, and probably Garrok with a team of Boxons, are going to find a ship that we can use to get the Boxon refugees off the planet. We only have a handful of shuttles here, but we can make that work if we have to. The Athena's AI surpasses the Boxan systems on this ship, and she works best with you. That's the reason I'm sending you to find a ship.
Zack drew himself up stubbornly.
It's really irritating when you start making sense.
This drew a few chuckles from the crew. Efren came over to his side and gave him a playful slap on the shoulder. Chapter 25 Zack double-checked his combat suit on the hangar deck. His implants registered a good suit connection. All of them were armed, even Garrok. Across the deck, he saw Kalin and the others making similar preparations. He had no illusions about whether Kalin could take care of herself. She could probably handle herself better than he could. He just thought they'd stick together for these missions. Zack looked away and shook his head. Efren chuckled.
"What are you laughing about?" Zack asked.
"You. This is what happens when you become involved with strong women. I know better than to argue with Katie about such things,"
Efren said.
"Katie is a soldier and has had training for this," Zack said.
All the mirth left Efren's expression.
"We're all soldiers now, whether we want to be or not. We have a job to do," he said, and glanced around to see if anyone was listening. "I'll deny ever saying this, but Kalin is the most dangerous person on this ship."
Zack frowned.
"How do you figure?"
Efren arched a brow.
"Did you see what she did on the bridge?"
"She helped with troop placement and coordination of the battle," Zack said.
"Yes, and she's an exceptional combat pilot. This ability of hers gives her a huge advantage over anyone she'll face,"
Efren said. Zack nodded. He'd devoted a substantial amount of time thinking about what Kalin was capable of, but he hadn't heard anyone else comment on it.
"Right. So we have the more dangerous mission," he said.
Garak walked over to them.
"I think there'll be enough danger to go around."
Two Boxen soldiers detached themselves from the group of soldiers waiting nearby.
"This is Strike Leaders Nolson and Corinne,"
Garak said. There would be two squads of soldiers going with them, one for each shuttle they were taking to find a working star carrier. Most of the volunteers who joined Clattamore's crew were soldiers. Very few were engineers or tech specialists, and Zack guessed that all their training on Boxan systems for the past 8 months was about to pay off.
"We're ready to go,"
Nolson said.
"All right, let's go," Zack said.
They boarded the shuttle. Technically, he was cleared to fly the shuttle. He had just as much training time in a shuttle as he had in a strike fighter, but navigating through a debris field with potential hostile drones was better left to the professionals. Zack glanced at Garak, who sat across from them.
"Are you sure we're bringing enough people? I mean, those carriers are pretty big," he said.
"Normally those carriers would require a crew of several hundred, but we have enough for a skeleton crew. We just need to find one that's intact and start the reactors to restore main power. Also, there are automatons that could be put into service if we need them,"
Garak said. Zack frowned.
"Automatons? Do you mean robots?" he asked.
Garak nodded. Zack felt his stomach sink to his feet.
"What's wrong?"
Efren asked. The shuttles lifted off the hangar deck and left the ship behind. Zack shook his head.
"We just fought a battle with a drone swarm, and now we're going to a ship that has a bunch of robots on it. And you ask what's wrong?"
Efren frowned.
"Has anyone ever told you that you're sometimes paranoid, my friend?"
Zack blew out a breath and opened a comms channel to Athena. "You won't become the robot overlord, will you?" Zack asked.
"Bow to me, human. You will obey me," Athena said.
"Your suit monitors indicate an elevated heart rate. Are you feeling sick?" the AI asked. Zack rubbed his forehead. "You picked a hell of a time to develop a sense of humor," he said. "I think what you're experiencing is called pre-mission jitters. You'll be fine once we find a ship and prepare it for the Boxen refugees," the AI said. "Now you're psychoanalyzing me?" Zack asked. "One of my core functions is to monitor the crew." "Okay, but if you suddenly develop any sociopathic tendencies, please let me know." "You will be the first, I assure you." Zack didn't reply. "This was another attempt at humor," the AI said. "I know. I appreciate all the effort you're putting into making me feel better," Zack said. "Just so there are no misunderstandings, the whole concept of me suddenly deciding the galaxy would be better off without intelligent life is absurd," the AI said. "Agreed, but I'm glad to hear you say it nonetheless. If there were any such occurrences, it would be because the machines were programmed to carry out such atrocities." "Athena?"
"Yes, Zack."
"Please stop trying to make me feel better. I'm not sure I can take it right now." "Understood. But would you like to know that